You're listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust.
Hello, everyone. My name's Mike Bell. I'm the National Public Affairs Lead for Thomas Pocklington Trust. Welcome to this latest edition of our podcast, where I'm very pleased that we've been joined by Peter Stanyan, who is the Chief Executive of the Association of Electoral Administrators. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So obviously, for a lot of blind and partially sighted people, doing anything independently can be challenging. And particularly that includes, having their democratic say through elections. So what kinds of things do local councils and returning officers and democratic support staff put in place to support visually impaired people to enable them to vote?
Well, the first thing that applies is the legislation, which is quite hamstrings people, the returning officers, slightly in terms of what must be produced at a polling station. As I'm sure many of your listeners will know, there's the tactile voting device, which I'm sure we'll go on to talk about, enlarged copies of ballot papers. But from my own personal experience, going a little bit further with things such as magnifying sheets, good lighting, all the sorts of things that as best as possible make it as accessible as possible.
So you talked about tactile voting devices. So exactly what are they? How do they work?
The best way to describe it is it's effectively a template that sticks to the ballot paper. And on the right hand side, as best as I can describe it, are sort of flaps that go down, which you lift the flap for each individual candidate you're voting for. It means to an extent that an elector can vote independently, but what it does require is for either the presiding officer in the polling station or a companion of the voter to actually read the order of the actual candidates out to then allow the individual voter to lift the correct flap effectively, mark the ballot paper with the cross, then the actual device is removed from the ballot paper before it's popped into the actual ballot box itself.
That's useful to know. And they are a requirement at every polling station, are they?
They are indeed. Every single, any elector wishing to use the tactile voting device, it just needs to ask the staff and it will be provided to them at every single polling station, yes.
Great. So you mentioned there the idea of having a companion or assistance to vote. So can you tell me more about that? So if a blind voter wanted to go and cast their vote, who are they allowed to take with them? And if they haven't got someone that they can take with them, what sort of assistance could be available from staff at the polling station?
Yeah, the companion of a voter must be somebody known to the voter. And must also be somebody who's currently entitled to vote in that type of election. So best way of describing that, if this was a general election, for example, taking place in May, somebody from France could not go in and assist that individual because they don't themselves have the ability to vote in that election. But if it was a local government election, as in May, because a French national can vote in a local government elections, they would be able to assist them. So it's a little bit confused. The law is changing, assuming the elections bill goes through, to make it any companion. So that will actually make it a little bit easier. But as things stand, there's limitation on they must be able to vote in that type of poll, not necessarily that polling station, but in that type of poll taking place. Now, in terms of the actual assistance at the polling station, the best assistance is, in fact, the staff. And there will be one individual in charge at each station, the presiding officer, and they are legally obliged to assist any elector in terms of advising them of the how what the ballot paper looks like, where the individual candidates are, not to mark the paper for them, but to assist them through that process. I think the one thing to reassure any listener in respect of that is they are duty bound by secrecy not to disclose any information. Legally bound not to disclose any information. If they did so, they'd be applicable to a criminal sanction if they let anything out the polling station that would affect the secrecy of an individual's vote.
Okay, right. That's really useful to know. Thank you, Peter. So in terms of the presiding officer and the other staff in the polling station, how well prepared and how well trained would they be to provide support to someone with a visual impairment? So I'm thinking about particularly guiding assistance around the venue and that sort of thing.
Yeah, every member of staff in a polling station, it will vary from area to area about the depth. But every member of staff will be trained in their responsibilities. I think the one thing I would stress is that the vast majority of polling station staff are volunteers. They do this job one day a year in terms of that process. So it's the need to train them every single election is paramount. The Electoral Commission produce some very good guidance as to the sorts of things that individuals need to be aware of. And it won't just be to do with providing the TVD, the tactile voting device, and the large print ballot papers. It'll be talking about things, walking the polling station, are temporary ramps required outside? Is it easily accessible, as best accessible as possible? Are the walking routes suitable? Is it a logical flow within the polling station? Putting the screens, for example, in the areas where they are best lit, or if not, underneath the actual lights themselves. So all of that will be dealt with in training. All of that is in the guidance manuals themselves.
But it's fair to say, isn't it, that there is help available and people shouldn't be nervous or worried about asking for support or assistance if they need it, because the presiding officer and their team at each polling station, you know, are literally there. That's their job, isn't it?
That's their job. And so the presiding officer is required, as are the poll clerks. There'll be at least two members of staff in many stations, more than that. They have a responsibility to do all they can to assist electors in the process of voting. They're also under a duty not to influence the way someone casts their ballot. So it very much is a case of anybody walking in unsure what to do, just ask for help and they will be given the appropriate level of help that's required, regardless of the questions being asked.
And you mentioned large print ballot papers as being another adaptation. So I think it's worth just clarifying exactly what that means. So that's a large print version. It's a large print list of the candidates, essentially, isn't it? Rather, you still have to use the standard ballot paper when you're actually casting your vote. Is that right?
That's correct. There's two versions of the large print ballot paper. One will be on the wall as a poster. And again, that will vary from size, depending on if you've got 13, 14 candidates on a paper, it won't be as large as if you're blowing up a 3 or 4 candidate ballot paper, for example. So, but that will be on the wall. But individuals can also request a copy of the handheld version to take with them to the voting booth itself. That will be there, literally a larger version in their hands to look at, and then to actually cast their ballot on the actual ballot paper, which will be the ballot paper used by all electors going into that station. So there's a couple of additional levels of assistance available.
That's brilliant. We've heard from a few people that they've had sort of mixed experiences around the availability of large print ballot papers. So I think it's probably useful to say that is a requirement. So they are supposed to be provided at all polling stations. And if something isn't available, the person to register a complaint to would be the presiding officer, would it?
It would be in the first instance, because every single polling station they must have the large print on the wall, the handheld version of the large print, the tactile voting device. They are the three basic minimum things that are required, as well as a couple of other guidance posters that are standard posters in the actual in the booths and in the station. So, yes, bring it to the attention of the staff, saying, I'm aware that you should have this. If there's confusion or they're not quite clear what's being asked for, the next port of call would be to the elections office to bring it to their attention.
OK, that's really helpful. Thank you, Peter. Just thinking about other technology. So you talked about obviously the large print paper, which is very useful, I think, for people with partial sight. Lots of people with a visual impairment use magnifiers and other devices in order to read large print. So what kinds of things are they allowed to use to assist them to vote, in terms of a magnifier or a mobile phone or something like that?
So in terms of, I think the crucial element to this is to make sure the staff are aware, if an individual elector comes in with a specific device or whatever that will assist them, is to talk to the staff themselves. There is a fallacy, I think, a misconception that mobile phones cannot be used in polling stations. That is there for the simple reason to protect the secrecy of the ballot. And obviously, where you've got uninformed individuals, they may feel that somebody with a mobile phone, if it's a reader or whatever on the phone or an iPad or whatever, they're taking a photo of the ballot paper, therefore they're breaching the secrecy provisions. That isn't the case. It's about communication in those sorts of instances. So if any of the listeners, and if your listeners actually would prefer to use their phone or another sort of device, talk to the elections office in advance to raise awareness, to make sure they're aware, and to seek the agreement to using that, but making sure the staff know as well. So effectively, anything that can assist an individual that will not actually cause issues around the perception or the actual case of affecting secrecy of the ballot or the secrecy of other individuals in the polling station can be used. But it's all about ensuring that people understand what that the actual device or the piece of equipment or whatever is being used for. It comes down, Mike, to the one of the provisions around the secrecy that the staff are bound by as well, is that no one should be able to identify who has voted as much as how they have voted. So when it comes to things like, and there was a huge thing with regards recently, a couple of general elections ago, about photographs, selfies being taken in voting booths by students in particular. The point there was that it's all very well doing yourself, but if you happen to get me in the background, you have breached my secrecy provision. So that's why it needs to be done in a safe environment where something outside of the statutorily provided items is being used. So It is that communication that's the crucial bit.
Great, thank you. So what about the options that are available in terms of voting by post or by proxy?
Absolutely. If I take the proxy one first, just to again reinforce what that means, it means that you as an elector will ask somebody to actually go to the polling station and vote according to your instructions on your behalf. That, you know, effectively means an individual isn't voting themselves. They're passing that responsibility over. It works. It's a good system in that respect to ensure the ballots are cast correctly.
And can I just ask about how accessible the application process is for postal votes and proxy votes? Is it a paper form? Can you do it online? How does that work?
Again, currently you can download forms, but it is a paper system, paper-based system. The reason for that is that a signature and a date of birth are required on the applications. They are held within the returning officer's systems. And when you fill your postal vote in, you provide your signature and date of birth. And for security reasons, it's a check to make sure that the ballot paper coming back has come from the person it was issued to in the first place. But there are moves to start to move towards online postal voting, doing something very much as you can with registering to vote, doing it in an online system. But we're not quite there yet. It is one of the proposals within the elections bill. But as we stand here today, it's very much a paper-based system. Yes, you can download the forms online, obviously seek them from the local elections office, but it requires a piece of paper to be filled in and sent back to activate that postal vote.
And have you got any advice for blind and partially sighted people in terms of the accessibility and the strengths and weaknesses of voting by post as opposed to voting in person?
One of the major concerns about postal voting has been raised with regards to anti-fraud, for want of a better phrase, is the fact that as soon as the ballot paper leaves the returning officer's hands, it is then down to the elector to actually complete that in an unsafe environment, a non-safe environment. In a polling station, it's a safe environment in terms of it's being managed all the time by the staff themselves. So it is very accessible, but equally it comes down to making sure that the individual is receiving that. What assistance are they? Do they require? Do they need assistance that requires somebody to help them do that, making sure they're not being coerced effectively into voting a certain way? So there are pros and cons to the whole process, but effectively, you know, there are many positives in terms of somebody who's blind or visually impaired being able to have a family friend, you know, a spouse, a child, whatever, to help them, to point out where on the ballot paper their choice goes, if they feel that's a safer way of doing that than going to a polling station.
So what would be your sort of big takeaways if you were talking to your colleagues in local government and your returning officers, presiding officers, polling clerks and so on?
And the crucial bits about it are, one, to reach out to local communities, to reach out to the experts in the field, because we may be elections experts, but we're not experts in every single facet of everyday life, effectively. Understand what the challenges are, but it's about also making sure that those who are delivering directly at polling stations are fully aware of the need to treat each individual by their individual needs. And that doesn't necessarily apply just to blind or visually impaired, or other, it applies to every single elector. where an elector is looking slightly lost walking into a station, less confident, whatever. It's about reaching out to them to make sure they feel comfortable to be understand how to participate in the process itself. So it very much is a case of communications is the word. It's about understanding. It's trying to learn more about some of the challenges that are faced, and ensuring that ultimately everybody's able to cast their ballot in a safe, secure, secret manner, in ensuring that the result that comes out of the ballot box at the end of the day reflects what the actual electorate wanted.
In terms of the changes that are coming up, so you've made a few references to the elections bill and some of the changes coming down the track. What do you think are the key ones that might present some challenges both to your colleagues as administrators but also to voters, and particularly one issue that's obviously of concern to blind and partially sighted people is the potential requirement for photo ID from next year? And I just wonder whether you what thoughts you've got about that and the implications it might have.
Certainly, in terms of, if I take the photo ID part first, I can almost play the straight bat on this one, because we don't know enough of the detail yet. In the bill makes provision for voter ID. How that will work in practice is still to be clarified. There's lots of debates going on as to how it will actually work. But put simply, what it will require is for any elector walking into a polling station to show an approved form of ID. That could be a passport, a photo driving license, or to be able to apply for a voter ID card from their local authority, which will have the photo on it, to just simply confirm that the name Mike Bell on the register relates to the person who stood on the other side of the table before the actual ballot papers issued. That's a very simplistic way of saying it. I'm sure there'll be loads of complications around the outside, but it's a huge area, but it's another step, really. The other major change is actually something that we as an association and members welcome, is the actual relaxation in what returning officers are required to do specifically for blind and partially sighted voters, where, as I said at the very beginning, the tactile voting device is prescribed. It must be provided to every polling station. You must follow this set of rules in terms of delivering that. What the actual bill is proposing is to provide a relaxation, and the wording will be coming along the lines of that the returning officer will make appropriate provision for those with, for example, with blind and partially sighted voters. The reason we welcome that is because it goes back to the one or two questions previously you asked me, Mike, about the need to make sure that what's being provided in polling stations is what the electors need. It could be take your mobile phone in to use a reader on it, or a magnifying sheet or whatever. We believe the TVD should still be there as an option for any elector who wishes to have it, but greater flexibility to say, actually, as a blind or partially sighted voter, this is what I need to help me cast my ballot. And if that's communicated with the returning officer, that therefore means that there's that greater flexibility to provide what the elector needs, not what the law thinks the elector needs.
And in terms of the flexibility that you've talked about there, there are obviously benefits, but also some potential risks that might be inherent in that, in terms of a bit of a postcode lottery in terms of voters' experience. So what sort of measures will be put in place to make sure that there is some consistency about how local authorities apply the rules and guidance?
Very much a case of we need the Electoral Commission to be very much providing good guidance, and then providing, probably through their performance standards, confirmation that sensible, suitable methods are being introduced. I heard today, for example, in Northern Ireland, where they've got massive polls taking place in May, they're actually offering now an audio service by ringing a telephone number, where the ballot paper will be actually read out to individual electors to assist them in advance of going into a polling station. What are the order of the candidates themselves? There could be audio devices being brought into areas. There may well not in other areas. It will be a little bit of a, as you say, a postcode lottery. I would say it more comes down to ensuring that there is good communication between local groups, local individuals who can actually best advise returning officers what are the best routes to go. So it's got the potential to be dangerous, but I actually take a slightly glass half full effort on it, in terms of No electoral administrator wants to stop someone from voting. So if there's something that will provide assistance to any group of electors, regardless of the categorisation, then I think that needs to be listened to and acted upon accordingly. So it's sort of a bit of a woolly answer there, Mike, but it comes down to learning what are the good practices being developed across the UK and then making sure that there's accessibility for everybody as a result of that.
What are the kinds of things that we might see coming along in future that will give more flexibilities and options around voting? I mean, I know that, for example, online voting is something that does happen in some parts of the world. Any views on that and where we might be headed in terms of electoral innovation?
There are lots of positive comparisons to be made, particularly with new and emerging democracies. One of the major concerns about introducing technology into elections is, at the moment, our elections are very safe. They're paper-based, a piece of pencil. You can go right back to that piece of paper to actually count the vote 50 times if you have to do so. Despite all the benefits of, for example, online voting, and that gives you lots of access to reading from the screen to you, enlarging it yourself, for example, is that hackable, for example? They're the sort of risks that are being dealt with and looked at by those who will make the changes to legislation. Ultimately, to make the steps forward into new technology, new ways of working, it takes time to assess it. So I would be pretty sure we're not likely to see radical change to what we do for a while yet.
Well, thank you so much, Peter. That's been an extremely helpful and informative discussion. Are there any final remarks that you want to make or any final messages for our listeners?
Only if there are concerns or there are ideas or there are just general comments, please contact your local elections office. As I say, every single officer involved in elections wants people to get their votes into the ballot box. Often it's a case of actually learning how can we improve on what we do? How can we make sure that any sort of ripples in the process can be ironed out? So it's really a case of please don't ever hesitate to pick up the phone, email the local elections office, and I'm sure you'll get the positive response to say, yes, we would like to learn from you exactly what it is that we can do better, if indeed that is needed in the process.
Thank you so much. So that's been Peter Stanyan, the Chief Executive of the Association of Electoral Administrators. Thank you very much for listening. And if you've got the opportunity to vote in the coming weeks, please make sure that you do. And hopefully that's given you some assurance, information and confidence to cast your vote independently, safely and securely from now on.
You've been listening to The Blind Spot, a podcast from Thomas Pocklington Trust. If you'd like to find out more about what we do at TPT, check out our website. Go to www.pocklington-trust.org.uk. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss the next episode. Thank you for listening.